This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harrell.
Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harrell and so glad to be with you once again. And we have a great show for you today. We start off with David Wilcock. He is, of course, the New York Times bestselling author and metaphysical thinker. And his newest book is The Ascension Mysteries, revealing the cosmic battle between good and evil. We'll talk to him. And then in part two, we have Alejandro Rojas. He is the mastermind behind the UFO site openminds.tv. And I don't think there's any site out there that does a better job than Alejandro's site in covering UFOs. And we're going to talk to him about the state of the art. Where are we in September 2016 when it comes to UFOs? And I think you'll enjoy what he has to say. And maybe we're turning a corner of sorts. You'll have to stay tuned for that. So now, with no further ado, we join David Wilcock. We'll talk about the Ascension Mysteries. And it's a red letter day here. We have the second week in a row where we have a New York Times bestselling author. And this week, we're going to talk to David Wilcock about his new and very popular book, The Ascension Mysteries, revealing the cosmic battle between good and evil. Now, David, if you've been following this space at all, is very accomplished and well-known. He is a New York Times bestselling author, a professional lecturer, filmmaker, and researcher of ancient civilizations, consciousness science, and new paradigms of matter and energy. His seminal thoughts and expertise on consciousness have reached the hundreds of thousands of people through his extensive online presence at divinecosmos.com. His first two books, The Source Field Investigations and The Synchronicity Key, were both New York Times bestsellers, and David lives in California. David, welcome to the program today.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I've got this question first for you, because I talk to a lot of my friends who are maybe more in kind of the New Age scene, and I ask them this question. I've asked several times, is there good and is there evil? And a lot of times I'll get an answer something like this back. Well, not really, Jim. There's just lower stages of vibration. Now, I personally believe there's good and evil. I'm guessing by the subtitle of your book, Revealing the Cosmic Battle Between Good and Evil, you probably believe there's a good and evil. Talk to us about your thoughts on that subject.
Definitely. I think that we are in a holographic illusion, which is ultimately designed by one infinite creator. And that one infinite creator is a loving consciousness. So there is a holographic aspect to the universe that I write about in the book regarding these discoveries that have been recently made about a geometric seed that the whole universe has flowered out from. It's actually a Merkaba type of formation. So if you look at it at that deepest intrinsic level, then yes, ultimately duality is a product of the holographic illusion. And so I think since there's a widespread pedigree of that thinking that comes from meditative background, Tibetan Buddhism and other types of Buddhism and Hinduism, etc., I think a lot of people are inclined to feel that therefore all evil is an illusion, none of it's real. But everything is an illusion ultimately, and at the same time, we live in the illusion. We are stuck, effectively, in the illusion. Even if you die, you don't get free from the illusion. You simply have an afterlife experience, which is another level of illusion. And within that level of the illusion, you plan out your next lifetime, and then you reincarnate back into the illusion. And once you're in this illusion, you're going to have a body, and you're subject to the law of karma. You're subject to being balanced for what you do to others, and that is, again, related to this concept of oneness. If you understand that all is one, then we are accountable for what we do to others because we're ultimately doing it to ourselves. So, again, though, we are going to have a life. We're going to be born. We're going to age. We're going to have biological functions, and eventually we die. All of that is reality to us. So even though it is phrased as an illusion by these mystical teachings, and there are scientific ways to argue that it's illusory, it's very real. If you burn yourself, that's very real. You're going to get a blister. You're going to have a scar. Those things do happen. And within this illusion, good and evil is absolutely real. And evil is a very formidable adversary that can really have a deleterious effect on the outcome of what you could call the illusion. So that evil is very present in our reality. And I am not in any way trying to be a Bible-thumping Christian or anything. In fact, I try to have a universal appeal for all religions, but the deeper into this thing I go, the more I'm validating the Bible. And I have to acknowledge that at some point, and I finally do in the new book.
Now, how did you happen upon all of this? I mean, did it just drop out of the sky? Was it a number of years to get to this point? How did this information reveal itself to you?
Well, that's a very, very complex answer.
Sure.
I'll try to give you a short answer. I describe in the book, the first half of the book is a personal journey of starting at a very, very young age where I'm having bizarre dreams that include some kind of wise old man who seems to be on a UFO type of craft. And he would talk to me and he was explaining to me that we were going to go through this massive spontaneous change and that we would become like magical beings once we go through this. So I was being told this in dream after dream after dream, and I mean hundreds of dreams like this when I was a kid. Now, granted, there's 365 days in a year, and these dreams were hitting me really hard from probably about age 2 to age 7. So there's plenty of room for hundreds of dreams if you're looking at that number of days in a year.
Sure.
And this is what was happening. It was a very, very frequent thing to be getting these lessons from this man. And then as I got older, I started to see movies that actually were saying the same thing that my dreams were saying. And this was very shocking to me. In the book, I describe movies like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, 2001, 2010, Star Wars, Superman, in which I'm seeing the abilities that I was told that people were going to have, like the use of the Force by the Jedi in Star Wars. I'm seeing the event that I was told was going to happen, like in the movie 2010, which totally blew me away. And that's where Jupiter explodes and becomes a new sun. And then those planets, the moons become planets that are habitable. So all of this stuff started out as an interplay between intuition and these bizarre coincidences I was seeing where movies were lining up very nicely with what dreams were telling me. As I got older, beginning in my sophomore year of college, I had actual disclosures take place in which, for example, a good friend of mine had a very intense 2-hour private conversation with his physics professor who had worked for NASA throughout the 1970s. And this professor confirmed that everybody in the higher echelons of NASA knew that UFOs were real, that they had crashed here. Roswell was only one example. There were others. And that they had identified what types of beings were in the craft. And they had actually taken the technology and back engineered it. And that a lot of the things we enjoy and take for granted, including computer chips, had come from this crash. And I actually do have the man's name. I'm not giving it out in honor of his family. He has deceased, but I do have the name of the professor. And I looked him up online and confirmed that he had, in fact, worked at a NASA research facility in the 1970s. So well, that was very interesting to go and look back on that.
Well, the one point that I always make, I'm in my mid-40s. I'm going to say that as long as it's possible. I'm in my mid-40s. And you know, when I grew up, we weren't rich by any means, and we had one phone in the house. It was one of those old black dial telephones. And now I have right in my hand an iPhone that has more computing power than the computer on Apollo by far. Now, the question is, how did we come so far so fast? If you look at the last 50, 60 years, how fast we've come in technological development, it dwarfs anything we did up until 1950. So how did that happen?
I was told by this friend of mine from college back in 1993, that's when this happened. So you and I are around the same age. I'm 43. So, you know, I was born 1973, grew up in the 70s and 80s. and watched the downfall of music as MTV showed up, but that's a whole other discussion we can get into. And what happened is you have this guy, this professor, telling my buddy, in the next 20 years, the level of technology that you will see as a result of reverse engineering that comes out will totally change society. And back in 1993, there were some very dinosaurish computer terminals. There were a few kids tapping away saying, oh, I'm using this thing called email and I'm talking to somebody in Holland, you know, and,
right.
And we would all laugh at them like, oh, email, who's going to do that?
Right.
You know? And, yeah, it's the iPhone that you have in your pocket is much more powerful than the tower computers that I was using in the late 1990s.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
No, they had big fans and it was a big clunky box. Now it's right in your hand. So yeah, I was interested to see if that prophecy was going to come true and how it would come true. And it's been really remarkable to watch this all unfolding. And most people are only now becoming aware of the deeper context of all the things that we have in our society and that there's a massive amount of things being kept secret from us. And we're just being kept in the dark about so much stuff. It's unbelievable.
Now, when you talk about motion pictures and some of these messages kind of getting through, and I'm even guessing kind of The Matrix would fall into this category as well.
Absolutely.
Is somebody or someone trying to tell us something?
This is a very confounding thing because the answer is yes. And we are conditioned to think, well, that's fiction and that's BS and there's nothing that's truthful in that. However, if you look at what's happened with WikiLeaks, and I have some episodes of my show Wisdom Teachings on Gaia that have recently aired where I discuss this. I have two weekly television shows on Gaia. It's a subscriber-based thing.
Sure.
You can watch online. Anyway, WikiLeaks actually came out and proved by leaking inside intel emails from Sony that the military-industrial complex think tank RAND Corporation is having all-day meetings at Sony headquarters with the highest-level brass who are deciding what movies to make. And RAND is going so far as to offer suggestions on how movies should be made, which appears that the people at Sony have to comply with. So what the heck is the military-industrial complex doing in these leaked emails controlling the outcome of what a major movie studio is publishing? Now, a lot of people suspected that was going on, but now we have the proof. So we actually know that movies would serve a political agenda. Therefore, why is it that the number of alien invasion movies as proportioned against the number of positive, benevolent ET films, it's got to be at least 200 or 250 to 1 at this point. Every film about ETs is an alien invasion. Or they'll go so far as to maybe have them appear to be positive at the beginning, but then there's the big twist, and of course they rip their face off and they turn out to be evil. What I'm saying is this is not an accident. It is not based on advertising revenue or sales performance. People want to see benevolent ET films. It's not about making films that sell. It's about making films that fit a pre-described agenda where the power elite do not want anyone to feel that there is a bigger kid on the playground than themselves. That's the point.
Interesting.
They don't want competition. They don't want free energy. They don't want anti-gravity. They don't want a lack of need for a money system, which the technology they're sitting on would eliminate the need for money. Because one of the things they have is 3D printing devices that you can just print whatever type of matter you want, and it'll be there. If you want a broom, you print a broom, and if you don't need it anymore, stick it back in the machine, it'll dematerialize again. You don't need to pay for that. Once you have one of those machines, it'll work forever, and you can use a machine to make another machine. So do the math. I mean, you don't need any raw materials, and this is actually what Atlantis had. And they were very dependent on that technology, and that's why society was reduced back to the Stone Age after this epic flood that was a worldwide catastrophe. And so we have the opportunity to have that again, but to do it a lot smarter this time. and with the help of a variety of ETs that are out there flying around in our skies right now, cloaked. We already have a very high amount of air traffic over the Earth. It's just that they use a technology the government calls masking. Most people would think of it as cloaking. And they are, our skies are very busy. It's just that it's done in a way where we can't see it. This is quite an insult to most people's intelligence. And so when you tell them that movies are actually hiding the truth, oh, well, you've just seen these movies and you're a fanboy and you're getting off on the idea that it could be real. I'm saying, no, look, the evidence actually says the military-industrial complex is making these movies. And one of the things they're doing is they are preparing us for an eventual moment of truth disclosure. They are preparing us for an announcement. And they have been doing this for four generations. That's 60 years, or no, 80 years. So you think about it that way, this disclosure is not something that's going to pop up out of nowhere. In the back when you and I were still like teenagers in the 1990s, late early 90s, you know, that kind of era, you were really fringe if you believed in UFOs. Mm-hmm. You were laughed at, you were ridiculed. It was not a very popular thing, even though, and I find this interesting, Star Trek Next Generation, which I loved, you know, it was the best show on TV as far as I was concerned, they had to go completely around the major studios to get that out. And it was picked up on Fox, because remember, Fox had just gotten started. It had the Tracy Ullman show, and then it had Married with Children. It had, then The Simpsons started as a cartoon on Tracy Ullman show.
Yep, and I recall that. Show.
Yep. And then all of a sudden, this new channel has this amazing show, Star Trek Next Generation, but only in certain districts, because the local district had to buy the show. It was not something that Fox licensed nationwide. They couldn't get licensure because whoever the powers that were at that time, they did not want Star Trek Next Generation coming out. And huh. And that was some of the research I did for the new book as well. I don't know if that all made it into the book or not, but it was some of the research I did.
Yeah, that's fascinating stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of things to know, and that's one of the hilarious aspects of disclosure, I find, is just the learning curve. Even if you are totally interested and fascinated, even if you really want to know the truth, just actually absorbing what there is to know, even if you did it as a full-time job all day, every day, it's going to take at least months to get even a basic handle on the truth, and that is providing that the truth is widely available to us. So there is a plan in place for full disclosure, and they do have these massive data dumps that they're ready to launch. But what they've discovered is, you look at WikiLeaks, which happened before Snowden, you look at what happened with Snowden, what the insiders have discovered, and this is the good guys, there is a alliance that's trying to help us and actually does not support mass genocide type of behavior. These folks have actually put together all the documentation we need to know the secrets of our colonization of our solar system and beyond. That's what's so crazy about this. The ultimate bottom line here, if you really want to go for the gold, is that we have a robust secret space program. We have colonization of many of the moons and planets in our solar system already. And this is not just little mining outposts. We're talking about massive facilities that have, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of employees, people from Earth that have been pulled up since the 1950s by the millions. And there was a thing called the brain drain in the 1950s and 60s that had an estimated 60 million people from Earth, many of whom from other countries outside America, but 25% of them were Americans. They had to cut the cords with their family, and they had to leave and go work out in space, and they never get to come back once they go up there. And they have had a lot of children. They do a lot of cloning, and they also have a lot of extraterrestrial personnel as well. So there are, it's a whole new world. And these movies really only give you a little taste of the truth, but at least it's a step in the right direction.
Well, it's a fascinating discussion. Our guest today is David Wilcock. The book is The Ascension Mysteries, and we will be back right after this on the Paranormal Podcast.
If you enjoy adult coloring books, check out the True Ghost Story adult coloring book inspired by Jim's Campfire podcast and books. Creepy Coloring Fun, created by illustrator Len Peralta. Find it at Amazon, or for the direct links, go to jimharoldbooks.com. Now, back to the show.
Back on the Paranormal Podcast, our guest is David Wilcock. He's the New York Times bestselling author of the new book, The Ascension Mysteries, Revealing the Cosmic Battle Between Good and Evil. Now, you talked about good and evil. Now, in terms of ET, in your view, are they all good? Are they all bad? Or are they a mix like humanity?
Well, in the ET spectrum, it appears that the good ones are really, really good and the bad ones are really, really bad.
Okay. It sounds like humans.
That's how it works. Okay. Well, you look at the Bible, and again, I'm not trying to thump the Bible, but it's just fascinating to me how much all this stuff lines up. And not only what's in the Bible, but people's folkloric idea of good and evil in that Christian context, where we have this idea that hell is a place that's under the surface of the earth, that sometimes people get dragged down into hell, that there are demons down there, that there is a devil down there. We have an idea of what the devil looks like. He has horns or vertical slit pupils. Sort of, there's often an idea of a reptilian type of scaly skin to him.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that the biggest negative ET group we're dealing with is a reptilian group that live in underground bases, that have scaly skin and vertical slit pupils, and that do at times, although thankfully not very often, they do at times grab people and drag them down there. And those people typically become slaves and end up having to work either in these underground bases or off planet. So it's fascinating to me that these ideas that we have are based on something true. It's entirely possible that in earlier eras of history, that people saw these reptilians show up and abduct people, and that others who were not actually captured saw these beings and depicted them. I didn't put this in the book, but I was looking at a lot of these Tibetan paintings of these mm-hmm. negative spirits, and mm-hmm. you see the Tibetan demons, they may be black, they may be red, and they're often depicted as dragons. And they have the teeth, and they have the fiery eyes, and they have the kind of this weird menacing appearance. It's not exactly the same as what our modern whistleblowers tell us these reptilians look like, but it's close enough that I think if the telephone game goes for a couple generations and nobody actually has seen it for a while, and then people make illustrations based on the folklore, that's exactly the kind of thing we'd expect to see. On the positive side, we have angelic extraterrestrials. And this is a big problem because there are people out there who are saying that they're Christians, and then they're also having a very harsh anti-extraterrestrial stance as a 100% blackout of any positivity around the subject.
Right.
Now, here's the problem, though. Go back to the Bible and look at what happened, for example, in the Old Testament, where King Nebuchadnezzar has these three angels who he doesn't think are anything but men because they look exactly like people. Mm-hmm. And he takes these guys, these three guys, and he throws them in a furnace that is built to be so hot that it's seven times above the temperature that roasts human flesh. And he puts these guys in there for a week. And they can't escape. And they walk out after a week, and they are totally unharmed. And their names are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yeah. And King Nebuchadnezzar falls to his feet and says, you are angels of the Lord. And the Lord, of course, means Elohim, which means mighty ones. And then the other word that's mistranslated is heaven, which actually, any other book besides the Bible, that translates as outer space. So Lord from heaven actually means the mighty ones from outer space. And there is a very legitimate Christian scholarship website called Bible Reality Check, in which there are multiple articles describing how certain subtle mistranslations have completely obscured the fact that angels are extraterrestrials. They are, in one sense, corporeal beings. They're just on a very different level than we are. Mm-hmm. And their bodies are not exactly like ours, but they may very well be able to be injured or harmed under certain circumstances. I mean, those three guys obviously could not be. But there could be all different types of these beings.
Now, I have a. We'll go ahead and finish your thought. I have a little bit of a controversial question for you, but go ahead and finish your thought.
I just want to also say that since I am also on Ancient Aliens and I've been in most of the episodes that it's ever had, which it's now on its 11th season, my perspective is, you know, I've given them a lot of material. I now have a consulting producer credit on the show, which hardly any of the other guests have. And I have consistently seen the same things showing up in every ancient culture. Beings that look like humans or human-like, that have advanced technology, they have wisdom, they give us mathematics, animal husbandry, metallurgy, architecture, written language, spoken language, law, how to build plumbing systems, all kinds of stuff. And this is very, very consistent that where we get this from is some type of benevolent beings that are trying to steer us in a positive direction.
Now, you talked about the angels. So let's take it a step further. What about Jesus?
Look, I think Jesus is our guy. I think he's the main guy. And I don't have any problem saying that. It's obvious when you look at my work, everything that I'm talking about is what Jesus was saying. I'm actually going out there and making a scientific case that we are going to go through an event that is described in the book of Revelation and other books of the New Testament as creating a new heaven and a new earth. And what are the teachings that you need to follow in order to get there? All the stuff that Jesus has been saying. I think where there is some type of run-in with dogma is I don't feel that you can only ascend if you are a Christian. I think that if you follow those principles, the universe is not going to condemn you if you're on some remote area of Papua New Guinea and you've never had Christian missionaries reach you, that you're going to be doomed or something. That mm-hmm. was where my mother actually had a conflict with her religious upbringing, because she was raised fundamentalist Christian and then went to Philadelphia College of Bible and had this problem, which was, you know, there's still parts of the world that have people that are uncontacted. My taxi driver was from Brazil, and she said that there's whole parts of Brazil where they don't mess with the people, and they're all indigenous. Nobody's ever talked to them. So are those people all going to, you know, be condemned? I don't think so.
Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
But, and that actually makes Jesus more cool, in my view, because he's not trying to say it's my way or the highway. He's just trying to say, if you want to reach this consciousness that I have attained, here's what you need to do. And that's to me an excellent thing. And in my new book, I think that anybody who is coming into it with a Christian background is going to have their doors blown off, because there's really very few people, if anybody else, who has the kind of scholarship that I bring to the table to take this out of the realm of speculative fantasy, which is ultimately what you're doing when you're looking at a religious text that has no context. It's only once you have a scientific context that you're not just saying, I believe it because this book said so, and I believe this book is true. You're saying, here's why this book is true. We know there has to be something you could call God. It's a scientific fact. The universe is built to be conscious and alive and make biological life. You can't get around that. The science is irrefutable. It's not popular. It's not publicized. But it's absolutely irrefutable. No one can kick out the number of arguments that I made for that, particularly in the previous two books, Source Field and Synchronicity. You can't ignore it. So then the question is, okay, if we do reincarnate, which is actually one of Jesus' teachings, and I totally get into that in the second book, Synchronicity, there's a whole quote where, if we're going to attack it from a Christian angle, they say, the disciples are talking to Jesus, and they say, who has sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Well, how could this man have sinned before he was born, and why would he be born blind if he had sinned before? So this is one of those little examples where the Romans who were editing the Bible missed one of the key components of the reincarnation puzzle. They forgot to delete that quote, and it made it through. So this is another really interesting thing. If I'm talking to Christians, and for right now I am, do you want to believe the dogma that was created by the Romans to instill a totalitarian government, which is very much a part of this evil that I talk about, or do you want to understand what the actual man Jesus was trying to tell you, which unfortunately is not very commonly available? It's not like you just get the undiluted truth when you read the Bible. You're getting an edited version. And this is what the Edgar Cayce readings were so big on. They were always talking about the secret teachings of Christ is reincarnation. And in fact, as I say in the Synchronicity book, St. Peter was one of the 12 apostles. Mm-hmm. And then he gave everything that Jesus told him behind closed doors. It's not in the New Testament. He gave all that information to St. Clement of Alexandria, who then gave it to one of the church's founding fathers named Origen, which is where the word origin comes from. And Origen wrote down, you know, third hand from Jesus' mouth to his pen, the secret teaching of Christ is reincarnation. That's the biggest thing that he didn't say, that he disguised in metaphors, because not everybody was ready for it at the time.
Am I correct that reincarnation was stricken from Christianity in the Council of Nicaea? Is that true?
Absolutely correct. Multiple references were cherry-picked out. This is why we're not getting the Nag Hammadi scrolls, why we're not getting the Dead Sea scrolls. There's too much embarrassing stuff in there. Because this is, here's another one, right? They're talking about Jesus. They say, some say he is the return of Elijah the prophet. Some say he is the return of John the Baptist. Well, what's the return of Elijah the prophet? A reincarnation, right? So again, this is tough because we have these very cemented structures in our consciousness based on the fact that if enough people say the same thing for long enough, we start to think that's got to be the way it is. And they begin to invoke that dreaded word they, the collective intelligence of they. And we don't even cite sources. We just say, they say, da-da-da, and everybody feels good. Oh, yeah, right, they say. Okay, great. Well, we got to think outside the box a little bit here because the adversary doesn't want you to know what's going on. You have this guy, Dr. Ian Stevenson, who in the 1960s and 70s interviewed over 3,000 children, mostly in the Middle East, because that's where people actually believe in reincarnation. And those kids were able to remember past lives accurately enough that they could be traced back to real people. They got the names, they got the character interactions, where they lived, all kinds of provable things. And what he found was that the faces would be the same or very similar. So we actually seem to have a carryover in our facial features. So this is not something that can be easily disputed. In fact, Stevenson's research creates undeniable proof of reincarnation. And then what happens is you start to line up Christianity a lot better with other religions. And it becomes a logical addition, a very important addition to an existing body of scholarship. It's when we get into, my God is better than your God, therefore I need to kill you. That's where, I don't think any of these great teachers are going to actually tell you to do that. I think that's what the opinions of people after the fact start to come up with
right,
when they've got a business to run.
Right. It is very sad that, you know, some people are negative towards religion, say, there's nothing but killing with religion. I even think of the beautiful song, but if you think about it, imagined by John Lennon, imagine there's no religion. Well, frankly, I don't think the problem is religion itself. It's people killing and hurting other people in the name of religion. That doesn't make, to me, religion in and of itself a bad thing. Now, I do have to ask you this. Do you feel in some way you've been chosen to be, and I'll use this word, like a disciple for this information, that you've been specifically chosen because you went all the way back to your early childhood to kind of communicate this message to mankind?
I think I've followed my bliss. I followed what I'm the most passionate about. Chosen makes it sound like there's some kind of religious thing going on. I feel that my primary work is as a scientist, and as a scientist, I'm looking at things that are very obvious to me that others do not see so clearly. And I've tried over the years to refine my ability in speaking and writing and research to be able to make these concepts as easy for others to understand as it seems to be for me. So I do seem to have some kind of unusual gifts that I've applied, but I would never want this to turn into a religion or to have people see me as some sort of prophet of God. I'm just trying to do my job. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people that I'm standing shoulder to shoulder with right now on Earth who I interview on some of my shows, who I have panels with at some of these conferences I go to. We're all trying to piece this thing together and figure this out and come up with something that makes sense and assembles the grand puzzle together, because the deeper you look, and I'm sure many of the people you talk to on this show, they're all doing this homework, they're doing the research.
Mm-hmm.
The deeper you delve into this stuff, the more mysteries you find.
Exactly.
So I called the book The Ascension Mysteries because I think if you start doing your homework deeply enough, which most people don't make it that far, no matter what you're looking at, whether it's the Illuminati, Freemasonry, whether you're looking at the corporate takeover of America, whether you're looking at why are they dumping toxic waste, why are they spraying the skies with chemtrails, ultimately, whether it's UFOs or anything, it all comes back to the idea that both the good guys and the bad guys are expecting something to happen that is very profound, that appears to be some kind of a multidimensional shift. And my God, if you actually go back through the four key books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, it's all over the place in there. It's banging you over the head, especially in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Every other page, it's jumping out at me. I only read these books recently because I didn't want people to try to say I was a religious zealot or anything. I've always tried to incorporate all different religious teachings, and a lot of them say that something's going to happen to the sun, that the sun's going to do something that changes who and what we are. And it's ultimately not going to be held off forever. This appears to be something that is coming in our not-too-distant future, and by that I mean maybe at the most 10 years, you know.
Wow.
There's a whole lot of other stuff we can talk about, but it does appear that this is a very real thing. And in The Ascension Mysteries, my new book, I attack it from religious scripture. I have more Bible quotes in that book than I've ever pulled in any other book before. I have quotes from Zoroastrianism, Hinduism, Egyptian scripture. I have quotes from the Quran, the Muslim Bible. They're all saying that this is going to happen, and I describe multiple different insiders who have classified security clearance way above the level of the President of the United States, 35 levels above and beyond. And those folks all know from their research, their classified research, contact with extraterrestrials, advanced time travel type devices that let them see into the future, they know this thing is going to happen. So I was talking to somebody yesterday, and she was saying, well, you know, you got to plan on the fact that 100 years could go by, nothing's going to change. I said, yes, you don't want to live your life as if you're absolutely certain that this is going to take place. But the case for this event coming along is very, very robust and undeniable. And it's so real for the people at the highest levels of the inside world that they are very actively planning on this thing happening now. They are in a panic, getting ready, battening down the hatches, getting all their stuff located underground because they're trying to get away from this thing, which great masters like Jesus tell us is a good thing if you are a positive person. If you're not a positive person, this goes all the way back to Zoroastrian scripture, then this outcome is very bad for you. All the negative entities that are here, this is going to cleanse the planet. That's what the Bible tells us. It's in all these other scriptures as well. It's very fascinating.
Well, it is a fascinating discussion, and we've just kind of scratched the surface. To learn more, you need to pick up The Ascension Mysteries, Revealing the Cosmic Battle Between Good and Evil. David, where can people find the book and also find all of the information you have on your website, your television program, everything it is you do?
Well, thank you for throwing me that, Jim, because I want to point out something really important here. Every time I do a radio show now, it is getting stolen and reposted on dozens of YouTube channels that are fake David Wilcock channels. And so the only one that's real is David Wilcock, Divine Cosmos Official. If you're not hearing this on David Wilcock, Divine Cosmos Official, it's a bootleg. And please try to help me by reporting fraud and impersonation. Okay, this is, there's like 20 or 30 of the old radio shows I did from years ago getting re-uploaded and called new for August 2016. This is happening, or whatever month it is. It's happening on an unbelievable scale, and I think it has to be the cabal. No human in their own backyard would be doing something like this. So this is an effort to try to bury my message and prevent people from hearing anything new, because all this stuff that's old is being said to be new. So again, David Wilcock, Divine Cosmos Official, is my YouTube channel, and it's youtube.com/DavidWilcock333, so that's the custom URL I have. My main website is divinecosmos.com, DivineCosmos.com. That's where I write articles. I try to get one out at least once a month. I'm hoping to do more. I'm starting to do videos now as well, so that's coming in. There is a bus backing up near me, so you're probably going to hear the beeping of that. I'm actually at a parking lot right now at Prince of Wales Hotel in Waterton Park, Alberta, Canada, looking at this view that is absolutely spectacular.
Well,
I'll just say this.
Go ahead.
One last thing is that I have dwilcock.com, and that's my Ascension Updates website. So go to dwilcock.com if you want the updates that I'm not going to necessarily say publicly on a website. I'll get them to you by email.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks for the inside scoop. Well, it has been a great conversation, really a mind opener, and we hope we can talk to you again, David Wilcock. The book is Ascension Mysteries, Revealing the Cosmic Battle Between Good and Evil. Our guest has been David Wilcock. David, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jim. This has been really awesome, and the view has been awesome, too, and it's helped me to get to the highest level as we're talking, so it's all good.
I certainly enjoyed having a chance to speak with David. He is a New York Times bestseller. I'm looking on Amazon right now. It looks like he is the bestseller in his area, so interesting to get his perspective. I hope you enjoyed that. And I know you will enjoy this, Alejandro Rojas on UFOs. Well, today our guest is Alejandro Rojas. Now, Alejandro is the chief cook and bottle washer, the brain trust behind the site openminds.tv, and they do videos and conferences and news. It's kind of one of my go-to sites when I'm looking for information about the state of the art in UFOs. He provides more information, and I think he does it better than anybody else on the net. And there is no specific thing that we're talking about in this show, but I thought it's fun to have Alejandro on from time to time to kind of talk about the state of the art, what has changed and what is new in the world of UFOs. So as of September 2016, we're going to ask Alejandro what he thinks is going on and if there's anything new and exciting. Alejandro, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be back.
Well, the first thing I wanted to ask you about are these signals that are apparently coming down, and nobody knows where they're from or what's going on. Give us your thoughts on all of that, because I think that's fascinating. It reminds me of something like the WOW signal from the 70s, or this idea that SETI has all these radio telescopes pointed out, and now something's being picked up.
Well, the media kind of made this a lot more exciting than it was, it turned.
Okay.
What had happened were there's a Russian organization, essentially Russia's SETI, because this is kind of confusing. So SETI stands for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and it's really kind of a study. It's an area of study. But we often, when we use a term, we're referring to the SETI Institute, which is the American organization, which has really brought this to the forefront. It's what Carl Sagan made the movie Contact about. Seth Shostak, Jill Tarter, Frank Drake are three very well-known scientists who are a part of that. And but this is a SETI organization in Russia. And they were releasing at some sort of conference a paper on this signal that they got in 2014. There was a little bit of information that was leaked on that. There was a amateur astronomer who runs a blog that people like who wrote about it. And the media read it. I forget which newspaper wrote about it first, but essentially read it. The paper didn't say anything about the signal being alien. It did say that, you know, they were looking at this particular area because it could, they think, harbor life. They listened to the area 36 times. They got a signal once, but only once out of those 36 times. So it was mysterious. They didn't say it was alien at all, but the media, because it was related to SETI, you know, mentioned that it could be alien. So SETI got wind of this, the SETI Institute, and so they trained their antennas on this area to see if they could hear something, even though they had very little information except for some rumors.
Right.
They weren't able to get anything, and Seth Shostak had even written a blog about some of the confusion. They were wondering, well, why didn't the Russians tell us about this? Why didn't they follow the correct protocols if they thought it was alien? Finally, the Russians did speak to it, and they said, well, we never thought it was alien. The media who said that. In fact, they said during the Cold War, we had a SETI program, and we had a signal, kind of their WOW signal. However, it turned out to be a secret Russian military satellite. And that kind of got mixed up in the story, too, because then everybody was saying, oh, this new signal is just a military satellite. Well, no, they don't know what it was necessarily, but they think that it could have been a Russian military satellite. They're just saying there's many possibilities of what it could be. But Seth Shostak wrote a really interesting blog on this because he mentioned how if this object or this signal was being sent directly at us by a civilization, first of all, we'd be seeing it still. But second of all, it would take all of the energy that humankind has ever mustered to be able to send just this one signal that distance.
Wow.
And if it was a signal that was kind of broadly broadcast by this civilization, then it would take all of the energy of our sun that our sun can produce. So, yeah, pretty interesting.
So we kind of talked about something that was kind of maybe all hype. What story these days do you think is not hype? What story's got you kind of raising your eyebrow and saying, now this could be something new, something different, or something interesting? What's your favorite story out there right now as of September 14th?
There are a lot of cool stories out there, I think. I mean, people, for instance, I'm saying that this thing is not an alien signal. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, they debunk a lot of stuff, but we're just looking to get to the root of the information. However, I do feel very positively about this field and what's going on in this field. And there's many things to indicate that. And I think one of them would be another science story, which is this kind of alien megastructure.
Right.
I think they call it Tabby Star or something like that. Of course, we have no evidence that it is some sort of alien megastructure. But what's exciting about this is the social aspect, that in this case, it wasn't the media. The media has fed on this hype, but the media did not start the hype. The media wasn't the first to speculate this was an alien megastructure. It was actually the scientists who discovered it themselves. When they wrote their paper about this weird, you know, essentially what Kepler does when it's looking for planets around stars is it'll watch all of these stars, and if a star dims, they'll watch that dimming and analyze the pattern and be able to determine if this sun has planets around it. Essentially, the planet's going in front of the sun, so they can determine that. However, with this sun, it dims at irregular patterns, so they can't figure out what that is. So when the scientists who were examining this wrote the paper on this sun, they included that it could be an alien megastructure, some huge structure around the sun that is collecting energy from this sun and that is, you know, distorting the sun or making it dim at irregular patterns. Other alien civilization ideas would be any sort of large kind of, let's say, fleets of craft going in front of the sun, huge crafts that are dimming the sun. So the idea that this is possibly an alien civilization was brought by the scientists. And So you think, okay, one scientist wrote a paper suggesting that, and so that's neat, but it's just one guy. But the story has progressed, and what's gone on is, first of all of the possible conventional ideas of what it could be, such as comets or things like that, have mostly been debunked. At least they haven't panned out, so it's still a mystery. Second of all, there has been it wasn't a Kickstarter campaign. I think they used one of the other social crowdfunding tools, but there was a crowdfunding campaign to be able to fund an organization so they can monitor this sun on a regular basis, because now they just do it periodically. But if they can monitor it on a regular basis, then they can get a better idea of the dimming and the patterns of the dimming to try to figure out what it is. What's exciting about that is when you look at the crowdfunding campaign, there are several scientists that are part of the campaign and who have talked about what a great idea this is and how we should do it. And I think it's even the majority of the scientists are hopeful in their statements that this could be the result of an alien civilization, and how important it would be if we were to discover an alien civilization. So it just shows that a lot of scientists are into this idea and open to the idea that there are alien civilizations out there. And to me, I find that really exciting, very cool. And a lot of these guys are young, you know, they're just out of graduate school, or some of them are still they're still grad students. But it's just this openness that we haven't seen in the past to openly say, hey, this discovery may be alien in nature.
Well, it's interesting because it really is a sea change if you think about it, because before everything was a laugh and a giggle, and now mainstream news media will say, hey, there's so many planets out there, Earth-like planets potentially, that the chances are much better that there is life elsewhere, as opposed to there not being. Now, it's another matter if they've been here or not. I think that's another question. So I will ask you that question. You know, on one end of the continuum, you have people who say, well, there are no such things as ETs, and all of this is a bunch of BS. But then I think there's fewer people in that category these days. I think that's going away. I think that there's people that say, yes, there's probably life in the universe because of all of these Earth-like planets, but it's never been here. They've never been here. That's one end of the continuum. And then there's the – I just got off the phone with Dr. Michael Sala, who believes that there, or at least has written a book about secret space programs, and the idea going all the way back to the 30s that there's been this capture of alien technology. I mean, totally to the other end, not even visitation, but active collaboration with different races of ET. Now, if the people say, yeah, there's probably ET, but there's planets, there's enough Earth-like planets out there is on one end, and then the idea that we have a secret space program and are in league secretly with ET. Where do you fall on that continuum, if you don't mind telling us?
Uh-huh. Now, I mean, there's a little bit of the debate that goes on within myself. However, we really try to focus and attempt to be like a mainstream news source, putting out information, what we feel the news should be doing. So we try to hold to journalistic standards.
Sure.
In that, you know, we cite our sources, who they are. And so we're looking for evidence and strong information. And I think it's important to keep a pulse on the mainstream, because if you do, like with this alien megastructure, there are avenues into the mainstream and ways to massage the mainstream to make them feel more positive about this field. And I think that's happening. So Michael Sala, for instance, he has expressed frustration with me in particular, not giving enough attention to the sort of thing he does. And I certainly do not discourage him or what he does. But there, to me, is a lot of speculation out there. There's a lot of things that could mean this or that. But it's speculative. And there are a lot of people, you know, Saul is putting together these pieces of information to put his worldview out there. But then there are many other people taking that same information and putting together a different version of what's going on. So you have a lot of different versions, and none of them are all alike. So speculation is fine. Speculation is great. Speculation is really important, especially informed speculation. But trying to build those pieces, I just don't see looking at the broader picture. I think that there are other people doing what Michael Sala does that have just as much evidence or just as strong of an argument to kind of a total different scenario. I don't think you can, you know, people like David Jacobs thinks the aliens right. are evil. People like Myla Salt or, Sala believe the aliens are all good. And I think, you know, both of their arguments are just as strong. So where do you go there? Let alone whether or not we're being visited at all. I don't know that. I like to kind of take a road that is a little bit more, I feel, scientific. And it is a little bit more down the road of, let's say, a Jacques Vallée or Alan Hynek or many others in this field do this, you know, and a Greg Bishop, for instance.
Right.
Someone who's going to be speaking our conference. He's kind of along these lines. And I think maybe even Micah. Hanks, who, of course, you work with a lot.
Right.
In that there are other possibilities. There's a phenomena. There's no doubt. There's a mystery. But the answers could be beyond what we can even conceive. You know, we need to follow the data and see where that takes us. And so I don't know that we can say for certain. We have been visited. I do believe, you know, worked a lot with Travis Walton over the years. That seems to be a very credible case. I believe there's these men in Allegash, Maine who had an experience. I believe that to be a very credible case, let alone the military UFO cases such as Rendlesham or others. We're doing a piece on the 1952 flap that we're going to have out on YouTube on Friday for free to everybody watch. It's a 20-minute kind of documentary. We're doing the Open Minds magazine again, but on video. And that's an amazing case that the Air Force Blue Book witnessed themselves. So there is a phenomenon. I'm just not willing to say it's definitely alien in nature and that we're definitely being visited, although I agree that that's a very strong hypothesis. It's a leading hypothesis, and it should be and it's a possibility. So I don't mind living in a gray area and not knowing, just trying to look for the answers and trying to share with everybody the answers so we can all kind of work this out together. Does that even answer your question?
Yes, it answers my question. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. No. I appreciate you giving us the insight there. Now, the thing is I want to express to you a frustration of mine. And see how you react to it and how you work with it at your site. I did a show for many years called The Paranormal Report. I did it with Clayton Morris, and then Clayton had to leave the show, and we went on a hiatus for a while, and I brought it back with Micah, who was fantastic. And then we went away from video last year, and then we've ended up sunsetting that show for the time being. But we still remain great friends with Micah, and we have a great relationship, and he continues to write for my site. And you shared one of his stories recently, so thank you. But one of the frustrations for me with that show, particularly in the video incarnation, was what we used to do is we would look at clips. Now, I just don't cover UFOs. I do ghosts, Bigfoot, the whole thing. So, but the frustration became for me was there was so much chaff and so little wheat. I mean, so many videos just seemed to be very vague, possibly faked. And with all of the technology out there, it is so easy to fake things. And in terms of doing a video show, at least that style of video show where we look at clips and we discuss what we think about them, I thought it became kind of futile because there was just so much, and so much of it was obviously tinkered with. What are your thoughts on UFO video and where we are now? Is there some good evidence still out there, or is there something to my frustration?
Oh, there's something to your frustration big time. And I guess I can certainly sympathize with it. And I think we all felt, you know, when cell phones, which are kind of these mini cameras, I mean, they're better than the cameras we had 10 years ago. They're excellent. But they're not, you know, the end-all be-all. And, you know, we thought with the proliferation of cameras that we would get more stuff and maybe, you know, the videos to prove that what's going on here. And it just hasn't been happening. But I think we've learned, at least I feel I've learned, that it's not going to – it's – I was just much too optimistic about that. It hasn't panned out. And it makes sense. Now we – from practice, we know why. Even – let's take the Rendlesham Forest where they saw these lights doing strange things, zipping around with a beam of light coming out of it. Let's say they had a cell phone there and they snapped some pictures. The majority of their pictures that they would get is a light either in the forest or in the sky, just an anonymous light that you don't know what the heck it is. And we're getting a lot of those. It's a light, especially with a photo and even somewhat with videos, but a simple light doesn't really give us enough information. So then we have to rely on the sighting report, which is just anecdotal information. And we really haven't gotten any further than if it was an anecdotal story alone. So it really hasn't panned out. Even, you know, what's made it worse is now that we have so much more in the sky, especially drones. And drones can have various lights on them. They can zip around quickly here and there and do incredible things. So when we analyze a UFO video, it's hard to rule out the knowns. It's much harder to rule out the knowns than it used to be. So we're left at kind of an impasse to say, well, we can't tell what this video is and we can't prove anything with this video alone. So then we have to again rely on the anecdotal information, and then the story is no stronger than the anecdotal information we had in the first place. Now, anecdotal information is great, and it helps us with tracking, and a lot of it is very credible. But it's just not proof or really strong evidence. So that's what makes it difficult. And so, like you, I have very little hope when it comes to videos. Now, we talk about and write about, we do a YouTube video, news report periodically, where we highlight some of the more interesting videos along with the witness testimony. And some of it's really interesting and makes you scratch your head, but you really can't do more than just say, I wonder, that could be something weird, but that's about as far as you can go. So you're right, it's frustrating, and all we can do is cross our fingers. I mean, I always tell people, go outside at night and try to take a picture of an airplane in the sky and see what that looks like, or even videotape it and look see what it looks like on your phone.
Right.
You can't tell what it is, but some anomalous light, and so, you know, that's where we are with this.
Now, that being said, man, I wish we would have had cell phone cameras during the Phoenix Lights incident. That would have been fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, what's amazing out here, you know, I've been in Phoenix now about 6 or 7 years. Well, probably longer than that. Coming about 7 years. And I was shocked. You know, I heard about Frances Barwood and her talking to about 700 witnesses. And I thought, wow, that is a lot of witnesses. I thought, this is an incredible story. But when I moved out here, I realized she probably only talked to a fraction of the witnesses, that there were many, many more. There were thousands of people who saw that thing, including now we know Fife Symington,
right,
who was governor at the time. So, yeah, I mean, there were so many witnesses. And this is a funny story, too. So you may know the name Jason McClellan.
Yes.
He used to work with us at Open Minds. He actually videotaped the Phoenix Lights. But this is probably a story that's happened over and over again. He thought it was pretty interesting and weird. He thought, wow, this is a cool UFO. But, you know, it was someone took it. And he didn't even really – it was no big deal. And so they recorded a football game over it. And so now that video is lost, and there's probably many other stories like that where the video is just gone. They thought it was interesting. They didn't know what to do with it, and it's just gone.
It reminds me when NBC actually used the old videotapes of the Johnny Carson show for the first several years of it when it was in New York, and used it to record when it was shot on videotape, record weather reports and all that. And all that's gone. It's just sad. So what makes a good sighting? I mean, when you I'm sure you get a ton of submissions and a ton of submissions that you really don't use. So what is your criteria? What makes you say, you know, this is something I want to post to the site, something I want to publish and share because there's something, possibly something to it. What are your criteria?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have a couple. There's a couple criteria, really. So, for instance, someone who writes for us a lot, in fact, every day is Roger Marsh, who's the director of communications for MUFON.
Sure.
And I think his criteria, he just looks for a good sighting, something that's interesting, where the person seems credible. And sometimes about half of his stories are cases that were closed and remain unknown. The other half are just ones that are brand new. So he's putting them out there before they're investigated, but he feels are interesting. And I think that's fair. I really think that every sighting is worth talking about and writing about. What I like about writing and sharing those stories, and especially like on online, is that people then start to talk a lot about it and analyze it, and we learn. Maybe it gets debunked. Someone figures out what it is. But then we learn from it as a group, and we all become more sophisticated and better at that. When I look for them, I look for something culturally significant. For instance, something that was written about by the mainstream and maybe they couldn't get it. I love cases where the media, maybe a television station gets their own sighting or video that has really baffled them and they get real excited about that. I know that happens in the ghost hunting arena too, and I love those. But those are good for me. Like I said, it all still comes back to anecdotal information. So then it comes back to the credibility of the witnesses. And that's big for me. So one of the things I try to tell people is, especially if something's posted to YouTube, you know, do a little bit of research. Make sure that YouTube site wasn't created just to post this video. Make sure that YouTube site wasn't solely dedicated to extraordinary UFO videos, and somehow these YouTube people are able to get the most extraordinary sightings videos, whereas MUFON, who people report to hundreds of sightings, you know, on a regular basis, they don't get those. So, I mean, that indicates they're probably hoaxing, and there are a lot of big hoaxers, Section 51, Secure Team 10, Dark Side of Moon or whatever, Third Phase of Moon. There's a lot of hoaxers out there, so you have to be careful. But, you know, you have these people who will post their video, and otherwise it's their dog, you know, this regular stuff. You can just see this. It's a regular Joe. Those are interesting, especially when that person – because the people who often really have sightings, especially if they're going to post them on YouTube, they don't mind talking to people. They'll talk to you. They'll talk to anybody. Because they just are like, I don't know what this is. What do you think this is? Did other people see it? And those are the most credible and exciting. And I think those are the ones people can relate to the most. And a lot of people will say, well, that's not evidence. You know, we can't prove that that's something strange. True. However, it does make people think. And that is really important. It's not just about proof. To be able to scientifically prove something, that's an extremely high bar, and it's going to be really difficult to do that. But currently, we don't have the resources to do proper investigation. In order to get those resources, we need to get more of the public online. We need to get more people feeling comfortable to contribute those resources, even a mainstream outlet like a university to put in those resources. And in order to do that, then we have to kind of open up the hearts and minds of the public. And that's what all of this does. It makes them think, and it makes them think, wow, you know, I live in that area. I know that guy, or that person seems very similar to me. They seem very credible. They just saw something weird. And so I think all of this is really important, and it does help.
One thing I've got to say, and I think that this is kind of indicative of some of the worm turning maybe a little bit. Last week we had Ben Mesrick on the show, who just wrote the book, The 37th Parallel. And mm-hmm. as I said on that show, I mean, the thing that people who maybe don't recognize that name, This is the guy who wrote the New York Times bestseller on which the movie, the Academy Award-winning movie, The Social Network, was based on. He wrote the book that the movie 21 with Kevin Spacey was based on. So the point is, this is a very mainstream guy. This is not a UFO guy. This is not a fringe guy. New York Times bestseller, major publisher. And he has done his book, and I believe there's a movie coming up on the 37th parallel about America's UFO highway. And it was interesting because I spoke to him. This guy, I believe he's Harvard educated, if I'm not, totally mainstream guy. And he said, I'm a totally mainstream guy. And I don't want to misquote him, but basically the idea was this. He came in with one set of perceptions, and he's come out of the project with a very different set of perceptions, and he's leaning more towards, yeah, there's something to this. Does that mean he believes everything? No. I don't think any of us who have our heads screwed on straight believe every single thing that's reported, but he thinks there's something going on, and he thinks that the truth will out. Hey, I was the first person to get an interview with him for the book. I was amazed, and I think that was just luck, but I'll take it. But it was a great interview in terms of his contribution, and I think that's very cool to see somebody from the mainstream taking up the gauntlet. I mean, people like you and Micah and all the different UFO researchers are great, but it's nice when somebody from the outside takes it up and say, let's take a fresh look at this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason that happened is because he partnered up and he started, you know, talking with Chuck Zukowski,
mm-hmm.
And his sister, Debbie Ziegelmeyer, who's on the board of MUFON and state director out in Missouri. But Chuck Zukowski was a reserve police officer, and that ended when he disagreed with them over cattle mutilation cases. I was actually there with him. I coaxed him into doing the cattle mutilation cases in Colorado, and I was there when that started. So, and I actually interviewed him and Debbie when they started putting together this idea that they think perhaps there are a lot of sightings along the 37th parallel, which is, you know, she's a state director in Missouri. That's along that parallel, and Colorado is along that, where he was getting these cattle mutilation cases. So I don't think we have enough information to really support that. But the point, I guess, I was getting at is that Chuck is a very grounded, credible guy. So is Debbie. They're doing great research. His real daytime, full-time job is developing microchips. So he's a credible person, and he goes about this in a credible way, in a way that, you know, people in the mainstream can relate with. And it's again, just why we want to interact with the mainstream, why we don't want to assume that they're all evil and Illuminati reptilians or whatever, because there are people open to these kind of things. And if we can just communicate with them at their level, like Chuck was able to do, then they'll get interested. And what's great is he found Chuck to be a very credible person and his research to be very credible. And here now we have a book from a mainstream guy and hopefully a movie coming out. So it's great. You know, it just another testament to like Leslie Kane, you know.
Yes.
It's another testament to how good work can really get the media's attention and take things to a new level.
Yeah, I agree. Leslie Kane, that book is one of my, I mean, like you, I'm sure, I get a ton of books and I cycle them through and give them to people and things. But that book on UFO sightings, I forget the name of it, generals and so forth, that's mm-hmm. That's got a place of honor on my bookshelf because I think that's one of the best examples and one of the reasons why I believe there's something to all of this, that kind of premise of that book. So it sounds like you're hopeful. You think that we might be on the road to some answers, or at least to a better discussion to finding those answers.
I am. I am hopeful, and I do believe that we're on a better track to finding information. You know, as I put together this Open Minds magazine, what we're going to be examining is the Air Force, how they investigated UFOs, what they did in these investigations, and how they moved forward. And for better or worse, the public's in a new place. You know, when I started doing this back in the 90s and was really, you know, plugged into the mainstream and everything, the public was in a different place. They didn't really, it was cynical to believe in that the government would hide things and lies and stuff like that. But now we've kind of gone over this hump where it's mainstream. It's like we understand that marketing, for instance, every commercial is pretty much a lie. We have, shown that, that we have kind of conceded that that's how businesses and professionals operate. They spin to the point of even lying if they have to for perception. So now when we look at how the Air Force dealt with things, and when we see that Blue Book didn't get the best cases, that there were other places that these best cases went, that even though the Air Force was telling us this was a silly topic, they were not treating it as a silly topic. These sort of ideas, I think, people can relate to and understand a little better if we can communicate to them what happened, show them that these are, government sources. We're looking at their story on what happened. I think we can really open things up, and I'm excited because now we can retell this story in a way where people can relate to it more. And with this 1952 piece that we have coming out on Friday, which is a start of really in-depth looking where and who investigated UFOs to show that the Air Force has been serious about this for a very long time, I think that we're going to have more information than people have had before, and we're going to be able to take this to a place where it's not been before. So I am hopeful. I think we're moving ahead always.
So how and where can people connect and also kind of reemphasize all the different things you do? You do the conferences, the magazine, the website. So tell us what they can find and where they can find it.
Yeah, you know what? We've got tons of our goal is to get information out. And so we have our website, openminds.tv, where you're going to find everything. We update UFO news there daily. So we've got new stuff going up there all the time. Some of them, a lot of it is sightings, but we also put more in-depth stories as well. We used to have a magazine, and now that some of those print magazines are all sold out, I'm starting to put some of those stories that were well-written and well-researched on our website as well. So we just have tons of stuff. I think it's become a great resource for people. We also have a YouTube channel where we post a video every week. Some of them are about sightings. Some of them are a kind of a newsy UFO report that we do. And now we've got this new Open Minds magazine that we're going to be doing starting Monday. You can find that also at openminds.tv. And we have the largest UFO conference that happens every February in Phoenix. The great thing, I think, about our conference, too, having just come back from speaking at one, is that it's very affordable. It's more affordable than pretty much any other conference. In fact, it's cheaper than most of the conferences out there, and it's 5 days. So it's like more than twice as long as any other conference. And the other thing that's great is we take the entire hotel. So everybody you interact with is there for the conference. So those of you that have gone to conferences probably can kind of relate to being in the elevator and having the weird look from the person who is, there for some other event. This isn't like that. This is the person in the elevator is there to talk UFOs. So it's just a really great environment. So yeah, we do all of that. You can find information about that at ufocongress.com, or you can find all the links to that at openminds.tv also.
Alejandro, thank you so much for joining us today. Openminds.tv is the site, and we appreciate your time very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you giving me the time.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that show as much as I did. I thought we had two great guests. I hope you're enjoying the new format where we have two guests opposed to one. I think it's adding a lot to the show. I also think we're seeing the numbers increase. And one reason is because you're spreading the word. So please keep up the good work, particularly as we head into the spooky season here. Please tell your friends about the Paranormal Podcast and the Campfire. And in fact, with their permission, sign them up for my free podcasts, Jim Harold's Campfire and the Paranormal Podcast. Take their cell phone, their smartphone, and with their permission, subscribe them, whether it's in the podcast app on the iPhone or Spotify or iHeartRadio or what all the different apps they may have or use. We're all over the place these days. And it's a very exciting time for podcasts, and I hope that you'll spread the word by subscribing a friend, of course, with their permission to these free podcasts. We thank you so much for tuning into this one. We'll talk to you next week on the Paranormal Podcast. Bye-bye. Now for the legal disclaimer. We do not accept money from publishers or content producers in exchange for interviews. However, as with most media outlets, in the majority of cases, we do receive complimentary copies of books and DVDs that we feature on our podcasts. Your purchases of books, DVDs, and other items via our Amazon.com links benefit Jim Harold and JimHarold.com and help us continue our programming. The sponsor messages you hear on the programs are paid endorsements, although we really do like them. For the full disclaimer, go to JimHarold.com, and thanks for listening.